here, we're talking about squids, of which Diana actually has a very deep-seated, deep blue-seated fear. Oh, what a great way to start this podcast.
Dad puns with Dr. Zhivago.
Anywho, it's not the point. The point is, we read about the squid book, which, this is a stupid fact that is a surefire way to kill this podcast and all the glory that it was starting on, is that this is the one book that I didn't own well into my 20s, maybe, late teens, and my sister bought it for me at a thrift shop because she is a elementary school teacher and trolls kids' books at thrift shops, and she bought it for me when I was like 20. And it's the capstone of my collection. Rachel's turning into a squid. So, yes, squid book. This is a weird one, kind of, and it bears noting, and I feel like we will always note this, and I'll feel a little bit like a jerk for always noting this, that we are back into ghostwritten territory. And forevermore, I will compare the ghostwriters to K.A., and I apologize, ghostwriters. I feel a little mean about it. But honestly, I don't think that this book... It was good. I was fine with it.
Yeah, when I was midway through, I was like, I can't remember if Kay wrote this or not. It's the credits aren't on my PDF, so, and I didn't bother to look it up. But the dialogue suggested to me that it was hers.
The dialogue was choice.
So somebody nailed it. Good job, dude.
I think that the strength of this book was in a lot of the dialogue, and it was really funny in parts for being like, for the whole scenario with Marco showing up, like everything that happened in the beginning at Spencer's Gifts, with Marco showing up as a gorilla with a sandwich board that said something versus Godzilla.
King Kong. King Kong versus Godzilla. Like, how do you even spell that wrong? Especially if you're a teenage boy.
Oh, that made me laugh so much. And then they got into another weird little, like, bicker fest later on in the book. I can't remember where exactly, but it made me laugh a lot. And, like, the fact that the Pemmelite security code was one number.
And Axe, like, makes all these really terrible jokes about them. Like when they're down in the ship and Tobias is like, oh, this is, you know, the way the setup is sort of like your... you know, the way that the Vandalite ships have, like, parks in them, basically. Like, a living space. It's not just a spaceship. And he's like, yeah, well, we had to make room for weapons, which is why we're still alive and they're not. And I was like, ice cold!
Burr!
Way harsh time.
That's so mean, Axe.
Yeah, he's kind of snippy, like, the whole way through. He kind of always is when it's, like, anybody who has better technology than Vandalites.
Yeah.
So usually the Pemmelites and G. Because that's the closest people around who can outstrip them. Womp womp.
So I guess we should get to the plot of this book, though. And that's where I feel maybe it was a little bit... It was just kind of a mission. And I guess a lot of the books are only just missions, but it seems like a lot of times they can sort of become about a larger theme or tangle into somebody's internal struggle a little bit. And this... didn't really connect those two things. There was an internal struggle, but it was a little bit separate until the Drode showed up really randomly. Drode? Is that it? In the end. To taunt Rachel a little bit. Because this is a Rachel book, and so, of course, you know, we're on number 27. We're almost halfway through, I think. And Rachel's arc, spoiler alert, which hopefully you've read these. This is the Great Animorphs reread. spoiler alert, Rachel, her journey through the series is one of doom, is one of succumbing to darkness, I would maybe say, which is really sad. It's not something to laugh at. We're really sad. We're really sad about it. It's really emotional. So, yes, so Rachel, the main plot structure, let's just get this out of the way, the main plot structure of the book is that... The chi net is down.
That's also another 90s reference. AOL. Oh, funny.
Anything having net on the end as, like, a way to signify internet is really 90s. Like, we don't really do that anymore, do we? We don't call...
Other than internet, not really.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
I'm on the net. Nobody says that anymore.
No, and nobody... It's not like... We call it, like, it's Twitter. It's not, like, Twitter net or, like, Facebook net. Like, we got over adding net at the end of things to make it...
Also got over using AOL.
Yeah. And I think also putting E, like E on the front of, I guess e-readers, that's the only thing now, maybe. But yeah, net's definitely gone. And so the Qi, the side effect of the Qi net being down is that all of their covers are basically blown. They can't, literally, they can't hide themselves in plain sight with their holograms and stuff. And so in order to, they need to get it back up. And there's a few steps along the way that they have to get, is like, there are two Qi that are out in the world that need saving. One of them is named Lourdes, and she is homeless. She lives as a homeless woman in kind of like a drug den.
Yeah. Flophouse is also a really 90s term.
I don't even know if I've heard it ever said at all. It shows you that I was not doing drugs in the 90s.
And it was I was like 8.
Mm. So it's good. It's good we didn't do drugs in the 90s.
Just 66.
So they need to go get Lourdes because, like, the Qi can't move either. And in the beginning, we how this comes to the Animorphs is Rachel and Cassie are at the mall, and they see Eric, and then they don't see Eric as a human. They see him as an android, and that's a bad thing. So they are able to get him out of there, and they talk to Eric's dad, quote-unquote, and Eric, and they tell them about this whole Qi net being down. And so they need to go get Lourdes. And then there's another Qi who works at a nuclear reactor, a nuclear facility of some kind. And he's locked himself in a closet, but at a certain point, he's going to be found out. I don't remember. This is just stakes, because they don't even go get this guy. This is just stakes. They need to get...
That was so funny to me.
Yeah.
Because it's like, oh, okay, yeah, this is going to be the mission. They're going to have to break into a nuclear power plant, which would be difficult. And then it's like, no, actually, it's worse.
Yeah, exactly. Like, they just kept it there to be like, oh, this is your deadline. Like, this guy in the nuclear power plant is your deadline. And the real mission, after they got Lourdes, because they still made that. Like, that's the thing about the structure of this book, is that it was kind of like, the most action happened when they got Lourdes, and then not very much action happened after that. Which, I mean, I hate to quibble about stuff like that, because when you get really random missions and things, like, it's not always going to follow a classic, like, arc structure of pacing and stuff like that. But, so the main mission is that they have to get the Qi net back up and running. They have to control-alt-delete something.
Basically, yeah.
They have to reboot the net.
They have to turn it off and turn it back on.
Unplug it for 5 seconds. Plug it back in. So the problem with this is that the computer, the Pemalite computer that is controlling the Qi, is at the bottom of the ocean. And, like, really, really the bottom. Like, a long way down bottom. And so the problem is that they need to get a morph in order to, like, get down there. And nothing, they don't have any, like, possible options. And Cassie comes up with sperm whale, and there's none in captivity. She comes up with squid first. Oh, because that's the dumb conversation, is she says, calamari, and somebody thinks that she means escargot.
Yeah.
And then they devolve into, like, a very dumb discussion. Oh, about 20,000 leagues under the sea, which Rachel knows, but Cassie calls it voyage under the sea, and Marco thinks it's journey. It's like a whole big, like, it's like 3 pages of nonsense surrounding this idea that's holding the book together. Which I can't complain. It amused me. And so they need either a squid or a sperm whale, because sperm whale kills squid, but also squid kills sperm whale. They're, like, mutually predatorial over each other.
You know, the kicker is that sperm whales can kill squid, but they can't dive as deep as squid can. So you need a squid, but you have to get a sperm whale first.
Exactly. It's like a stepping stone. Which makes that, that's another thing that makes this book really weird, is that all the action happens when they get Lourdes. And then they get their idea, and then it's, like, impossible. So then they just go home. Probably anticlimactic.
Just y'all went home?
Like, yeah, like, they get, it's like this book is a checklist, and they get number one checked off, and then they get to number two, and they get their idea, but then they don't know how to make it happen, so then they just go home and have dinner. And so, luckily they do, because Rachel sees on the news that a sperm whale has beached on shore. What are the chances?
Andy!
I like how everybody was immediately just like, that's not a coincidence.
But none of them were like, oh, it must be the Elemist.
I thought it was the Elemist. Who wouldn't think it's the Elemist? I like, someone who said...
they don't really, like, they decide that, yeah, it's not coincidental, but then nobody ever, like, wonders really about it until the drone shows up, which is okay, I guess, but...
Well, somebody says, I forget who it is, if it was Jake or who, but they say it's not the Elemist, it's not his style, and I was like, it's totally his style!
It's his style. Like, it's both their style, that's the whole point.
Exactly! Like, they will give you the, like, tool that you need to facilitate you, but they won't actually do anything for you. Like, that's totally the Elemist style. We just went over this last book, Animorphs, come on!
Yeah, it wasn't that long ago. Plus, like, I mean, ostensibly, it's a good thing. Like, oh, here's this whale that we need, so that we can save the Chi, so that the Yurks don't find them, or that, you know, so that humans don't get this outstanding technology, and then the Yurks find them. Like,
yeah,
it's a good thing, it's a thing that Elemis would want, but it ends up not being him.
It ends up being the Drode, right? Like, the little minion of Krayak?
Yeah, and then Krayak by extension.
Yeah. Whatever, okay.
The Drode is a dick. That's
he
all you
is.
Know.
He's just, like, a little terrible thing. He kind of reminds me... in the episodes of 30 Rock, when they didn't know what to do with Rachel Dratch, and they put her in that little blue suit so that Tracy Morgan could hallucinate her, and that's kind of what it reminds me of.
Great. Now I'm only going to see that when the George is again. Because he does.
Oh, lame. So, they
that's
go...
really great.
Excuse me. So they need to go and acquire this sperm whale so that they can catch a squid, so that they can dive deep enough and find this ship that they don't have any way to find either. Like, this whole thing, it's like a fishing expedition. I don't know, that's not a proper joke. Anyway, we're gonna keep
it
going.
Probably would have been easier if they just did what Tobias suggested and hijacked a diving bell.
Probably.
Like, guys, apparently you live in a place that has a nuclear reactor, so there's probably, like, really good technology around. Just do one.
Kind of. So, no, well, but they're the Animorphs, not the robot-morphs. I don't know. Robot Steelers.
That would be Transformers.
That would be, and I'm glad that this is not that. So, they morph, they go to the beach, and of course the sharing is all there, like, pretending to be all not evil. And not all of them need to morph the whale. They decide to go in pairs. And... of course, Rachel wants to do it. Jake says they have to draw straws. And then Rachel, with a single look, bullies Tobias into cheating for her so that she'll draw the short straw. Which is pretty smart, and of course she would. And then Tobias, because
they're in love!
Yeah, because they're in love. And also, I don't know, I think that... I go around and around on the Rachel-Tobias romance. I need to, like, really think about it. Sometime. Don't look at me like that.
Well, I mean, what is there to think about?
Well, I just think about the fact that his choice to go with her is such a her choice. Like, it's such a Rachel thing to be like, okay, I'll help you cheat and get your way, but I'm also going to make a really reckless decision. And I know it's part of, like, caring about her and stuff, but he does it, like, he doesn't like the water, he doesn't like being underwater, and, like, so therefore he... manipulates the system to get what he wants as well, which is, I don't know. Like, I think that there's a parallelism in their decisions, which I wouldn't have necessarily expected. Like, I don't always think about Rachel and Tobias in terms of, like, oh, they're so similar. So that's where I was going with that, is that I don't know.
I mean, I don't think they're that similar, and, I mean, he makes the same decision, and sort of for the same reasons, but I don't know. When you get down to it, like, I think they're totally different reasons. Because, I mean, the whole book, she talks about how she likes danger, and she's an adrenaline junkie and all this. I'm like, okay, yeah, it's true. It's going to be truer in the future. But then, and I guess, like, in his books, we've seen him talk about, like, you know, hunting and being a predator and all this.
Mm.
So, I mean, I guess they are more similar than I usually think, which is interesting. Because personality-wise, they aren't similar, but I think they have a lot of same motives, maybe.
Well, it's something to think about, maybe, that, like, in this circumstance that they have been thrown into completely by chance, that's where the sort of similarities are cropping up. Kind of like the inverse of Rachel and Cassie, about how if Rachel and Cassie were left in the normal world to be best friends, they would be best friends forever and never have any problems. But that because they are put in this circumstance of trying to save the world from parasitic aliens, it's like dividing them. It's pushing them further apart and making them fundamentally unable to sort of connect anymore because they're going in opposite directions because of this. And so, and Rachel and Tobias are kind of the inverse, where Rachel and Tobias don't necessarily have any common ground in the real world, but when they're put down in the middle of this fight with the circumstances of Rachel having, like, a war to sort of spark what's dark inside of her, and Tobias having, like, his existence as a hawk to tap into, like, the predatory thing as well, like what you were saying, that this, like, fight is making them similar and pushing them together. And Derek tearing Cassie and Rachel apart.
Nice one.
Thank you. Ding.
Nice depressing one.
I know.
But I do think, as far as like the draws go, that Rachel does that for a pretty selfish reason, and Tobias does it for a non-selfish reason. Like, maybe there's elements of selfishness in that. I mean, is it selfish to want to like keep your girlfriend safe? A little, perhaps. You know, depending on your reasons.
Well, but I think you can turn Rachel's around and say also, like, I mean, if you look at, if I were another Animorph, maybe Marco perhaps, like, I would be very grateful that Rachel is the first one to go running in, because I don't want to do that. Like,
oh yeah, I'm not saying that, like, necessarily the decisions she makes are bad, or like that she's not a good person for doing them.
Well, sometimes they are.
You know, despite what she thinks of herself.
Mm.
I don't know. It's confusing right now, I think, like, whether you can say that any of them ever makes a good choice.
Yeah. Well, that's part of the...
Or not a good choice, but like...
They're all hard choices. Yeah, they're all hard choices, and I think that's part of what KA does really well, is putting these people in situations... And then kind of forcing them to make decisions. That's the theme of every Jake book right there. Is like, I have to make a decision right now, and it's awful, and I hate it, but I need to. And how all of these decisions shakes out, like, says something about, you know, who they are as people, and how they cope with the fallout of their decisions says something about who they are as people, aka every Cassie book ever done.
Well, the fact that Jake is still, at this point, like, doing straws... says a lot about him as a leader, I think, because he could just cut to the chase and be like, okay, Rachel, go.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he doesn't do that. And, like, after the straw drawing, he looks pissed off, because he knows what happened.
He's so pissed.
And he expected that to happen, and he's probably not sad that it happened, but you can't, you know, if you're going to lead effectively, you can't be that person. You have to, like, at least put up a pretense.
Yeah.
Of, like, fairness and equality, and we're all, you know, we should all have a shot at death-defying stuff.
Yeah. Well, that's the other thing that a little bit irked me. Like, the Rachel Tobias stuff was, like, kind of there in this book, but not really. And honestly, like, I wasn't super into it because it wasn't very, like, explored very much. It was literally just a guy named T.T., just terrible, it stands for terrible, terrible, asked Rachel out earlier in the book, and she was like, no, because I kind of have a boyfriend, but he's a bird, and that's awkward. Should I maybe date other people who aren't birds? That, like, to me, and then in the end, it was just like, no, I'm going to turn him down, because, like, Tobias had my back underwater, and, like, we're, you know, together or whatever, which, it wasn't, like, enough for me to, like, really get into it, because the thing of it is that it is a dumb decision for Tobias to be the one to go acquire that whale. He is a hawk.
Yeah, hawks landing on whales is sort of, like, you know, that would draw attention.
It did draw
honestly,
attention.
Yeah, the whole, like, the whole romance and, like, questioning plotline wasn't my super favorite, and I'm not really sure how... they could have done it better. Like, I think that it was a somewhat necessary element in this particular book, like, as a backdrop, but I think that a future book does it better.
I hate that you remember so much more than me.
Well, I don't know. I actually don't remember why I remember this one so vividly, but it's from Tobias's perspective, and for some reason it works better with him than it does with her, because it's like, of course Rachel would never cheat on you. She would never date some boring dude named T.T. Like, this is not a thing that would ever happen.
No. She wouldn't
even
date him because...
Her mind, she would discard it immediately, like she did.
Well, the fact of the matter is that her first interaction with T.T. is that he distracts her and she falls off the balance beam and she feels stupid and hates that and wants to go murder things. So, like, she's not going to date a guy who the first thing that he does is make her feel, like, powerless or vulnerable or flustered or not herself.
And tries to turn it into a terrible pickup line.
Go away, T.T. Ugh.
Yeah, this is bad. So, I don't know. I mean, being that they were teenagers and this is, like, middle grade, like, I expect and desire, like, romantic plot lines mm-hmm. and questioning of who I'm dating and, like, why we're together and can we be together in a war scenario? Mm-hmm. Like, what's going to happen to our relationship? But thus far, like, Jake and Cassie is really more interesting.
Agreed.
And Marco's humorous fails at various roles. Because he doesn't really ever get any play ever.
Oh, Marco.
Which is weird and sad. But not the point.
I do want to point out, though, just because of the comedy element in this book, that when Tobias does go acquire the whale, which again is a really dumb decision, and I'm pretty sure that, like, because they were like, well, Axe can't go up and acquire it. I was like, they should have ruled Tobias out at the same time, like, also. So, but whatever.
Anybody who's not a human has no reason to be touching a whale.
Yeah, like, and his talon gets stuck in the blubber, and then they have to morph seagulls to pretend like they're, like, fighting him off, and then Marco starts pooping on people.
There's a whole, yeah, it's definitely, like, all the morphing here is basically a comedy of errors, because, like, when Rachel morphs her whale for the first time, her head, like, doesn't change immediately, and so she's got all this, like, fucking blonde hair everywhere, and it's, like, strangling people.
Yes.
And then she, like, when they morph squid, she, like, at some point she, like, starts to eat Cassie, and I'm like, what is happening?
Yes, that was the other thing that made me laugh a lot, is that Cassie and Rachel in this book, well, like, they don't have very many interactions, but the ones that they do have, they're either, like, really, like, touching, like, battle, war, like, my best friend is injured stuff, or my best friend is killed.
She's like, someone shot Cassie. I'm gonna kill everything.
Yeah, exactly. Like, stuff like that, which, like, warms my heart. And also, there's two different scenarios in here where as I was reading, I was just like, you guys are so married, because they were bickering over really stupid stuff. Like, in the beginning, when, like, Rachel corrects her about something, and, she says something like, you know, you don't have time to do this, but you can be sarcastic right now, or something, and then later on, like, when Rachel tries to eat Cassie, and Cassie's like, really, you're trying to eat me right now? Like, they had such a, like, delightful, like, married people bickering going on. I was like, best friends!
Yeah, most of the humor in this book was really good.
Mm. Alright,
The actual, like, action part, sort of anticlimactic.
Yeah.
Because once they get down to the ship, it's like, well, okay, so they're in the ship, and then, of course, Mr. Freeze is going to show up, because he always does.
Mm.
But then the combat ship just, like, takes care of itself. It's kind of funny. It just kicks them all out.
That's, like, when I got to the end, and I was, like, looking at how, because, like, you know, I look and see how many pages I have to read before we do these, and I was like, there's not that many pages left, and nothing is happening. They put in the single-digit code. They got on board. Like, everything's fixed. But then they had, like, a weird mini-threat where Axe was interfacing with the Pemmelite ship. And I embarrassed to stay just real quick because I skipped a part. So Tobias and Rachel morph whales. They go down. They find a squid. It nearly kills Rachel, but Tobias takes care of it because he's all predatory, and then they morph the squid, all of them, and then they go down and find the family ship at the end. So then they get inside. And Axe, like, is interfacing with the computer, and he's like, we did it! Like, you know, all of the G-Net is back online, and then the computer is like, thank you for putting in the information. All of the G will self-destruct in 15 minutes. And I was like, wait, what? How did that happen? And then that...
Cheerful voice.
Well, and that's the thing that's, like, So they started another clock. Like, I don't know what it is lately. There was a Good Wife episode, the most recent Good Wife episode, or maybe the one before that. No, the most recent one. Where, like, I've become painfully aware every time authors are raising the stakes really clumsily. Where they're like, oh, this person's really important, and they're going to watch you deliver this speech, and she might hire us, so you need to do a good job on this speech, as if your pre-established, like, fear of public speaking weren't enough. That was The Good Wife. And then this one, it was like, they had the nuclear plant guy, and that was like, he's our stakes, there's a clock running. And then we get into the Pemmelite ship, and then they start another 15-minute clock being like, oh, but they're all gonna blow up, like, new stakes. And then they went away again. Like, and then, the Pemmelite ship fixed it all, like you said. And I was like, well, then what's the point?
I found myself comparing this book to the Polar Bear book.
I was just thinking that. The one where they just get stranded and then they walk a lot until they get home.
Yeah, so, I mean, like, the action isn't necessarily, like, the point. And then there's, like, you know, other aliens and stuff. But this one, unlike that one, so far anyway, it's possible that one could come back. But this one, like, does tie more into, like, the myth arc
mm-hmm.
with, like, Kryak.
Mm-hmm.
Even still, like, we just had Kryak in the last book.
Mm-hmm.
Can we, like, wait a couple
before
we think about that joke again?
Well, and I think even though the Tobias Rachel stuff, you know, for us wasn't necessarily as strong as it could have been. But I do think... And this could be personal bias, but that, like, Rachel's darkness arc is always compelling, and so I'm always a little more likely to give a little... Because I would put this book above the Polar Bear book, personally.
Yeah, I would.
And I think part of it is because of Rachel's... that it's narrated by Rachel, and getting inside Rachel's head is always, like, kind of a worthwhile endeavor because, I don't know, it's different in there. Like, hearing what she has to say versus what she does. Because I think... When you get into individual narrations, that's the time where people can talk about, you know, how scared they are or what their concerns are, vulnerabilities and stuff like that. Like, being able to get in that person's head, that's what comes with the territory. And that's something that we don't get at all when we're not in Rachel's head. And so hearing her, like, fret about being a whale underwater. And some of it's, like, you know, when, like, earlier when... They're trying to get Lourdes, and she's worried that they've killed Cassie and Marco. Like, stuff like that, even if we're not in her head, we know that that's, like, fundamental, like, fear for Rachel as, like, a warrior. But, like, also going down to the bottom of the ocean and knowing that she can't, like, morph out because it will kill her. Like, that sensation of being trapped is, like, really hard for her. And, yeah, she still volunteers to do it, also. She's like, Rachel, honey...
doesn't have to always be you.
But it does, though. She's a mess. Her darkness arc is my favorite. And that's... So when it pays off, and I think maybe this is where it does get really good, and where having the Krayak there, the little droid, the Rachel Dratch droid, representing Krayak, is that he looks at Rachel and then tries to recruit her. For, like, the forces of darkness, which is really stupid.
It's really, really brazen. Like, seriously? You're going to come here and taunt all of them with their impending doom, then giggle a little bit, and then try to offer her a job.
He's like, he's like the evil version of Titi. He's like, I'm going to hit on you and really inappropriately, and it's not going to work.
There's your parallel in this book.
We're still at a point, and I don't remember if we ever get to a point. I don't think we do. Where we ever get to a point where Rachel would be tempted by that. I think that Rachel would only do that in a situation when it would have benefit to someone other than herself. That's like, Rachel would make the hard decision. I don't know how that would happen, but that's theoretically, that's the only way it would.
Are you forgetting what the price is?
Well, but...
That she has to kill Jake?
Well, yeah. All right. Fine. I forgot about the price.
I don't know. I mean, it's not impossible there could be a situation where killing Jake would be for the greater good. I mean, as we will see, someone dying sometimes can be for the greater good.
Well, okay. No, I did forget that killing Jake was the price. So yeah, but my point remained, like, when I was reading it, I was like, that would never happen. Like, and I think that even if killing Jake weren't the price, that would also never happen. Because I feel like I've talked myself in and out of, like, the Rachel darkness kind of thing, where, like, it's there, and she's becoming more and more changed by this war and her circumstances, and in a way that scares her because it's waking something up in her that she is scared of, but also feels is her, like, who she truly is.
It's uncanny.
Which is so, like, it's so much. I love Rachel so much. And so, but at the same time, the introduction of this Drode and, like, you know, being like, hey, Rachel, like, you've got what it takes to be a bad guy. All you gotta do is kill your leader.
It's like, he's literally the devil's advocate. He's like Craig's lawyer.
He really is. He's Wolf of my heart.
He's officer. Well, I didn't think that, I mean, I didn't think that you're supposed to think that she would go for it.
No.
Or that she would, that, you know, as the character in her own mind, like, would even, like, think about it.
No.
Or that the Drode expected that she would. I thought it was more that, like, he was, you know, at the behest of his evil overlord, he was, like, being the first step, like, putting the idea in her mind. Because once you, as we've learned from Inception, once you have an idea in your mind, it doesn't leave.
That is a very good point. I think you've hit the nail on the head. Because also, unraveling Rachel or making her vulnerable is not to expect that she would make that decision, but to put the idea in her head. Because in the David books, Rachel not freaks out, but Rachel is very unhappy about the fact that Jake manipulated her and took advantage of her recklessness in order to get what he wanted and keep his hands clean. I mean, Krayak didn't ask anybody else to join his forces of darkness, and he didn't act like anybody else was really, like, you know, good enough for it, but Rachel was. And so I think, yeah, you're right, that, like, that's going to be Rachel's sort of, like, put that seed of doubt in her head that she's not like the others, that she's not as good as the others at her core, and that she's always going to be, like...
And
yes,
that ultimately she's better. Because that was the other side of, like, the Drode's speech, is that... It tells her all the things that she believes about herself, because she does think she's a badass, and she does know she's a great warrior, and she likes that. And, you know, under normal circumstances, non-war circumstances, like, that's the gist of every playlist that I have saved on Atrax. Girl power! Thrive! Little Mix!
I'm so upset!
In this case, like, it takes a good thing and twists it, and that's what the Drode's about.
I'm so upset that the things that Rachel likes about herself and that she associates with her identity are going to be the things that kill her. I'm so.
Everything's so.
This is why I can't, like, Rachel books are the worst. They're the worst. She's my favorite. Ugh, what a terrible, wonderful creation. All right, now that we've got that riddled out, we did it. We figured it out, everybody. We're getting an awful lot of material out of this book that we said didn't really have much plot stuff, but that was really funny.
Well, we did agree that it was mostly the things that we liked about it, and that it did the best was, like, basically the character stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, agreed. Well done, Ghost Rider. So let's figure out what's next. Number 28, The Experiment.
Oh, the cowboy?
I think it may be.
That's another, like, one-off that I really enjoy.
Do we get a fun one? Yeah, it is the cow book. Join us, won't you? In the meantime, try not to be freaked out about Squid, and maybe you can distract yourself by crying about Rachel, because that's probably what I'll be doing. Until next time.